Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. In every episode, we aim to help marketers maximize their potential by getting real with the industry experts across multiple industries and disciplines. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy, we talk through it all and leave you with actionable tips to help you in the day-to-day of marketing. Today, I'm joined by Hani Anis, a founder of Kahana Digital Marketing Agency and also founder of her own bridal fashion line. As a marketer, Hani strives to share the stories of South Asian-owned and founded brands through digital marketing and social media. She's handled all aspects of content creation, PR, founder features, social media strategy, and influencer marketing. And the industries she covers vary from lifestyle, fitness, beauty to food, services, fashion, and so much more. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for our guest today, Hani Anis. Hani, thank you so much for joining us on the Grin Gets Real podcast. I am really excited to just be chatting with you about just your experiences and, you know, the idea of culture and marketing.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you about this whole other sphere of marketing, I guess.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I feel like our pre-podcast interview could have been the podcast itself. Yeah. So let's let people into our world. And before we dive in, I'd love for you to just kind of set the foundation of the area of your expertise in marketing specifically.
Sure. Yeah. So I specialize in, I would say, South Asian owned and founded businesses. That is primarily my niche that I market. And some are very, very small, like mom and pop shop type businesses. And a couple of them are like venture funded. So very early on in their funding, but they're not quite as big. So I would say small business still.
I love it. And one of the things that we really dove into was the effect of culture as it pertains to developing the marketing strategy and just kind of how you got into the niche that you did get into. You know, there's this adage of see a need, fill a need, and you definitely did that. So I'd love to explore a little bit of the need that you found.
It kind of goes back into, for me, I was a founder first. So I had started off being a founder of my own South Asian business. Right out of college, it was, and it still is existent. It's a South Asian bridal fashion company where we custom make and design luxury bridal and groomswear pieces for the South Asian market. And that in itself was found because we don't have like typical bridal stores where we can go to get Indian outfits. It either has to be to go back home, which isn't that easy, especially once the pandemic hit and now. Or you have to go to these one and only stores, either in New Jersey, New York, California, like travel to some one of these and pick from a very limited selection. So that's how that business started. And I found that like when I was marketing that business, I learned the sort of cultural aspect to that and just learned marketing as a whole through that. And other people would start approaching me about marketing their South Asian owned business. And that's kind of how I fell into it. It was just by a trial and error basis. I hate to say that, but being in it, I found the need and then kind of took my opportunity. And then once I started building up a network of sort of clients of mine through working in corporate and all of the stuff in between, I found that the freelance world was exactly where I needed to be because the need was still missing. In corporate, I worked for a broader spectrum in finance, and then I also worked for an agency that was more broad, not even South Asian businesses, I'm sorry, just small businesses.
Yeah.
So taking that and the South Asian aspect and putting that together was really important because no other agency kind of existed to do that. And so this year in February was when I officially left my corporate job in finance and pivoted to just doing my own agency and hiring full time. I found that a lot of my founders that were coming to me were saying the same thing along the lines of like, we've worked with other agencies, but the problem we found is they're great at what they do. It's not even that. It's that they don't understand kind of the nuanced cultural aspect of our product. And then they don't understand how to take that and kind of pivot it to the mainstream audience, because there's two parts to that. It's one is understanding the culture, and the second is, how do I take that and translate it to the mainstream audience so that the product, because a lot of these products aren't South Asian centric either. Like, that's the biggest thing. So yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to follow up with, because I think it is important to note that you're not just concentrating on South Asian products to South Asian, you know, audience. Like, it is towards the broader. So how do you balance that out?
Yeah. So I think for the first part and the very initial part when we onboard a client is really understanding their story and like what made them start the business. Because when someone asks me that as a founder, I know exactly what made me start it, right? And it goes back to a cultural root of me loving Indian clothes. And that's why I started the business. And so when I sit down with my founders, it's some aspect of that, or it's something like, my grandma used to make this recipe for me all the time, and I wanted to share it with people who may not even know about it, or with skincare, same sort of thing. So you understand the story, and then you think to yourself, okay, why would anybody else who doesn't know about this be interested? The funny thing is a lot of the times the products, depending on the region of India they're from, like I learned something new about their culture, or I learned a new cultural aspect. And then that's when it kicks in, is I'm like, okay, I thought this was cool because I didn't know about this. And so other people probably don't know either, that aren't from this region, from this specific place, or have the same culture. And so that's the angle we kind of use to market it as a whole.
So you look for the questions that people would naturally have about a product, and then also marry the culture part of it within that strategy.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to gauge, like, what is the weight of the value of culture when it comes to you developing the marketing strategies in general?
Yeah, that makes sense. So I think when I was working with like other brands, non-South Asian in general, I think when you're a brand owner, typically you have a very like specific story that ties to some element of either your culture, your background, some way you grew up, or just like something you saw. So I think that knack already kind of came from just sitting down with so many founders and talking to them and learning about their story. And then now sort of getting to the South Asian aspect of it, even though I wasn't specifically from like the region of India that they are from, or the region of Pakistan, or like whatever area they're from, there are, I think, a few certain values that all of us kind of will relate to or just share across the board. So it adds another element of understanding to the person in front of me usually, because they're like, okay, some of these things that I'm going to talk about within my family or within, for example, like the broadest one that most people talk about is family support when starting a creative career in the South Asian community. That's one that a lot of people know about. So if the founder's sitting there kind of talking about how hard it was for them to even sort of explain to their family what starting this business was like, or something like that, I can immediately connect to that because I kind of come from the same background in that sense. So
yeah,
I would say the empathy and the emotion kind of is an underlying factor that I can instantly connect to without them having to go into the deeper level of the story. And then for me, it's just kind of taking that emotion and translating it to what it would make me feel like. So that part, I guess, for me, just it comes a little bit more naturally than just having to think about it. So it's not as much of a mental hoop as you may think, which I don't know if that answered your question, but...
No, it absolutely did. And now I have follow-up questions. Because to me, what I heard you really explain is the level of empathy and sympathy that allows you to truly listen to what the brand story is. My next question is much more about like the storytelling part. So now you understand it, and what you're trying to do is figure out how can you evoke an emotion from whatever campaign it is that you're trying to put out, right? So what's that bridge that you get to for storytelling? I know the story I want to tell. How do I tell it? Like, do you look at the distribution channels? Like, is it an email? Is it in social? Is it like, I need to make a kick-ass commercial? I, you know, all of these different ways that you can put together a campaign to help evoke that emotion. How do you decide what is like the best next platform or next distribution channel or next campaign that you can create to execute on that strategy?
Yeah. So I think based on the story, then we come up with what that, and every story is different in that sense. So based on the story and the emotion we want to invoke, I think you can lean into certain channels over another. For example, if it is that kind of like personal home hitting type of story where like visuals is what really matters,
yeah,
then we're going to go for something that's a little bit more visual, which is Instagram or even YouTube, or put together a video shoot or something of that nature. But if the client's story is a little bit more powerful in terms of like the way they write or their words, then we're going to go for something along the lines of like a blog post, or even, you know, what's like a hidden one is like doing LinkedIn posts on their personal LinkedIn. That's a hidden one that gets like a lot more traction than people know. So that one, or just an email and back end stuff. Analytics is a huge driver as well. So we'll look at the distribution of their analytics, the open rates, things like that, and kind of figure out, okay, this is a story, this is the emotion we're trying to get to, which angle is going to take the best route for us to get the most people to kind of listen and connect with the story.
How pivotal do you think it is to tell the brand's story in order to truly market like a product or a brand?
I think, and this has happened, especially during the pandemic, where we've reached into this era of authenticity, more real content, that sort of pivot. And for me as a consumer, I've kind of always wondered a little bit just like about either where the product comes from or not even the higher ticket items, but some of the more niche items that I'll buy. Like, obviously, I don't think about that really with like toothpaste or like, you know, normal stuff like that. Like, you just can't. But if it's like a specialty food product or just like those little things that bring you joy, it's nice to know that like, for example, my coffee client, it's nice to know that like every time I'm pouring a cup of coffee, it comes from the small batch farm in South India.
Yeah.
Or the earrings that I have from my one of my artisanal goods client. Like, it's nice to know that like some woman in India sat there and made these beads with her hands. Like, so things like that, it kind of helps to connect more with the product. And then you almost want to like either use it more, or it just, it's the little things of joy that come in your day with just using a product. It makes it a lot more enjoyable. So as a consumer, I think I've always found that the more I connect with the product, the easier of a hook it is for me to buy it.
Yeah.
And so I just feel like the more a brand can tell their story in a personable and authentic voice, it's easier for them to maybe sell their product, and not even sell their product, even if it's a service, because at the end of the day, I think during the pandemic, most of the people, what people missed was human connection and just like forming relationships. And if you as a brand can form a relationship with the consumer as opposed to just like a transaction, I think it matters a lot more. And then they'll want to come back. That's the key, is that you'll have more long-term relationships in that way.
Yeah. You know, it's the reason that we don't pick up the phone for an unknown number, right?
Yeah.
Versus like the person that we know on the other end. So I think that a lot of things that you're describing as far as like storytelling, and you used, you know, adjectives like joy, right? You're evoking an emotion. And I think that evoking an emotion is brought by the storytelling that you're talking about. I also really appreciate what you had said about authenticity. And then in regards to like the human connection, just kind of since the pandemic, do you think that authenticity has become more important now in marketing? Or do you think it's just kind of always been there and now we're just kind of talking more about it?
I do think the more successful sort of stories or brands or whatever I've connected with the most, I found to be like more authentic branding strategy. Mm-hmm. For example, just me being a founder when I started my bridal company, what you'll find in a lot of luxury bridal or even like wedding related content is that it's very curated. It's very aspirational, which isn't a bad thing, because yes, every single bride that I talk to has a Pinterest board.
Yes.
But what I have found is when it comes down to outfits, when the bride comes in, like it's like the biggest day of their life, right? So like you want to be a little bit more picky. And that's what ends up happening is when they try on outfits, you can just see them like kind of tearing themselves apart a little bit because they've seen this model in one of these publications wearing a similar outfit and they don't think they look like that person.
Yeah.
So when I was marketing my own company, I found that I wanted to steer clear of the model route, and I used real couples in all my images. And people found that to be really odd, but also unique, because they would be like, oh, I saw this girl that looked like me in one of your pictures.
Yeah.
And I would love to get an outfit. So that's kind of, and then also the people, like the real people that I used in my campaigns, they would also come back. They would bring their friends, or someone would be like, oh, I saw my friend wore your outfit in a picture and I'd love to get my outfit created. So I thought it created a better community that way, instead of just curating the content to look pretty.
You bring up such a really good point. It's that difference between curation and authenticity, right? I think that for, as a brand, you would probably want to do, well, actually, maybe you don't want to do a combination. I don't know if it's like, all right, do away with like the curated and then focus more on a more authentic connection with, by leveraging like real people. Not the models aren't real people, but they're also like you said, the aspirational versus inspirational, right? Like I want to know in your example, I would want to know based on my body type, what that would look like. I mean, obviously I'm 5'2". So the models are typically not my height, and it's completely different. So I think that you bring up a really good point. I'm curious to know what you think some brands are missing when it comes to authenticity.
I think maybe it's also, they could be targeting a different consumer profile altogether as well.
Yeah.
Because there are people out there that just see the aspirational picture and are like, I want it regardless. They don't even go down that rabbit hole of thinking, is it going to look good on me? Is it this? Is it that? It might just be that's their consumer profile that works with them. And to be quite honest, bringing authentic content is a lot of work.
Yes.
It truly is. Curating very pretty content, honestly, is, people think that could be a lot more work, but I think it's a lot easier to do because you don't have as many factors to really think about. You're trying to create like a dream vision at the end of the day, not as much of like, oh, I missed this bucket that I needed to hit. I missed this. I missed that. I'm not showing this. Like, so it almost like, for some brands, it might just be an option that's a lot more feasible for what they want to do, which is fine.
Yeah, it definitely takes more time to be authentic. And you have to be okay with being raw as a brand as well, too. Being raw and being honest and being upfront. And it's, I think, hard. And we're definitely reaching this stage, whether it was the pandemic that accelerated it or not. But I definitely think as consumers, we're reaching a point where it's almost like we're demanding that level of authenticity. Now, really tell me, what do you stand for? What are you about? Because to your point, like consumer goods, you just kind of need those really quickly. But there are people out there that look into toothpaste with fine tooth comb, right? Right. Like it depends, right? On the brand, what they're selling and all of that good stuff. I'd love to hear how culture and authenticity balance themselves out for brands, especially with so many things just kind of going on in the world. And not that I want to get like political, but I know that there are a lot of brands out there that are saying, hey, I want to be more diverse. I want to be more diverse. Let me just hire XYZ person in order to kind of quote unquote, just like check the box. That sounds really callous, but do you know what I mean? Like, there is a lot of like, hey, I know that we need to be diverse versus we completely own our culture and our diversity.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think I found just, and we talked about this in the pre-interview as well, just switching from the finance world to the marketing world, there's definitely been a little bit of a shift there because as we know, just from news and just like statistically, the finance world isn't that diverse when it comes to even women in finance to like cultural diversity. Both of those kind of are a struggle there more than a lot of industries, to be completely honest. But now I think in general, people are looking at that a lot more. I think the brands that are aware of it, there's also kind of, I think, the fear of just cancel culture as a whole.
Yes.
And I think that's a big deal because someone might do it because they genuinely want to, but then in the media, it could get portrayed as they just did it because of a number or like, so I think there's a fear of every single decision someone makes, whether it comes to curating their content or doing a diversity campaign. Like, and I have this conversation with my brands on a daily basis where they're question, about a certain campaign, whether it's large or small, will be like, will I get canceled? I don't want to get canceled. And it's scary. It is, because yeah, when you're a small brand and you get canceled, like, you're not even playing in the big leagues at that point. And then it can make or break your business, honestly.
Yeah, I definitely, when you put it that way, I do feel for a brand, because it's true. We definitely live in a cancel culture, and you have to watch your step while also being authentic and then checking off all of these boxes. And then, you know, ensuring that you're not offending, but you're also supporting absolutely everybody, which I think as a brand can be kind of a challenge. Have you seen just some great execution of like walking that fine line?
I think so. But I think at the end of the day, what happens is like you realize that you can't hit it all. Like it's, So one of my clients, we did a fashion show in right after Fashion Week in New York. And we had tried for it to be as diverse as possible, which it was. However, later on, she was like, oh, I wish we had more of this. I wish we had more of that. So there's always things you can work on at the end of the day, even just with any bucket, whether it's more cultural, more diverse, whatever. I think it was more important that the goal was to make it as diverse as possible, which we did in the span of the timeline that we planned it. But then the conversation afterwards was also positive in the sense of, okay, when we do this again, this is what we need more of. Maybe we did too much of this that we can scale back on, instead of just kind of like, oh, we checked off that box, we're good.
Oh, I love that so hard. I love the reevaluation of what you're already doing, because I think that as a brand, it makes you human, right? Because we are human. We do live in a cancel culture. But if you're always out there trying to do your best, especially from a brand perspective, and you truly want to tell your brand story out there while keeping culture in mind as well, too, it really does take constant evaluation of the campaigns that you have done. And I think most marketers, one would hope that most marketers, after they execute a campaign, they go back and they kind of do like the good old SWOT analysis. What went well? What are some of the challenges? That's obviously not what SWOT all stands for, but I'm sure everyone listening knows what I'm talking about when it comes to it. Yeah. So I really, really appreciate that. And I love everything that you've brought to the table in regards to, you know, how you remain empathetic and sympathetic when it comes to culture, and then how you integrate that with just your marketing strategies. It's prediction time now, though. So I would love to hear from you. What do you see happening in just kind of digital marketing in the next 1 to 2 years?
The way it's going, I just feel like, A, there's going to be a lot more new talent. We've seen that grow exponentially in the last even during the pandemic, actually.
Yeah.
First of all, like that. And then even before that, like since Instagram even started, there's been so much new talent. I think as people evolve through the industry, I think we're going to be, and I hate to put, it's not even competition. I know people see it that way when they first enter as well, but I think every single new person that comes in just brings something so refreshing to the table. So I'm excited to see that aspect of it. I also, just with kind of platforms changing, who knows, we might see a new platform emerge in the next 1 to 2 year.
That's true. That's true. So, and then we all have to adopt it and figure out how to use it.
Right. That it scares me a little bit, but it also makes me excited. I think even the last time we talked about how digital marketing is a field that like week to week changes, day to day as well, but like specifically week to week with algorithms and things changing, it's something that constantly keeps you on your toes. So a new platform would just throw everything off, but I won't be surprised if that happens.
I wouldn't be surprised either. And you're right. Digital moves so quickly. Now, just kind of on one of the predictions that you had made, because I want to make sure that we distinguish this for our listeners as well, too, is that you mentioned new talent coming into play. And when you talk about new talent, you're kind of talking about just the creator and then influencer marketing in general, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. As a whole, influencer marketing, but I think it's funny because influencer marketing, and again, we were talking about this earlier, but it doesn't stop at any age. Like, that's the part that often I think surprises people when they think about it, because there's grandparents that are influencers, there's moms, there's kids, there's like little kids as well as teenagers, and then there's middle-aged people that are working and have families. Like, there's so many different types of influencers. There's so many niches. And I think those niches are just going to continue to grow.
As the host, I will digress and ask another follow-up question. But do you think that creator or influencer marketing helps a brand be more authentic and maybe connect with their audience a little bit more than, you know, a traditional campaign, like a banner campaign through Google?
So I think it, and this is tricky because, again, on my end, I've worked on the influencer end as well. But I think what's tricky about it is because I work with small businesses, oftentimes these businesses, like, the budget to work with an influencer sometimes can be astronomical to the point where, like,
yeah,
it could literally be all of their profits for a year. And, like, to me, that can't be worth it, because then you're investing a huge chunk of money in one person and the results aren't guaranteed.
Yeah.
Even with Google, though, the results aren't really guaranteed. Marketing in general, like, that is a gamble you make. But at the same time, putting it in one bucket isn't sometimes worth it for these brands. So I think from what I've done in the past is, I think it depends on the influencer. There are influencers out there that are wonderful. They really take the time to work with small businesses and work with them.
Yeah.
It's not so much transactional, but then there's a whole nother part of the industry that's more transactional and is only out there for what it is.
Yeah.
I think the balance that I tell my brands too is, I'm like, look, it is their job, so it's fair that they're asking for money. But sometimes the difference can be, like, it's still human to human at the end of the day, too.
Yeah.
And you, as a brand, and then as a person, too, you want to work with someone. And I said this before, even consumer, when the influencer is marketing your product, if they connect with that product, it's going to go so much longer than, like, just someone doing one paid post on, or, like, next to two other paid posts in a span of, like, a week.
Yeah, I think that essentially when it comes down to it, you want the type of creator or influencer that's going to represent your brand like they're your friend. My friend is going to tell me genuinely what they think about something, and I'm going to trust that because I know them. So you're almost looking for that connection, not just, like, you know, a really great Instagram feed, right? Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Because if you want to repurpose content, then that's where it's at. Then you should focus on that. But if you're looking for that authentic human to human connection, you need to take a deeper look at, like, how engaged are they? Are they truly connecting? Can they represent my brand authentically as well too?
Yeah. And what I found is a lot of the people we work with for influencer marketing, just with some of my brands, is people that have either authentically just bought the product and not even told us. Like, we have a lot of influencers on the back end that we can see that literally will just purchase the product and not, like, reach out to the brand and, you know, like, ask for it for free. They'll just kind of purchase it. And then when we realize that on the back end, we'll be like, oh my gosh, let's reach out to them to do something because they already like the product. And we don't even call it influencer marketing at the end of the day. It's like friends of the brand, because that's truly what you want, is people who support the brand as a friend, like you said.
Yeah. And I think it's a great way to authentically connect with your ultimate buyer persona, your audience at the end of the day, for sure. So I definitely went down the rabbit hole, but I appreciate you following along with me. I've taken up so much of your time. Thank you so much for coming on and just sharing your thoughts on culture and marketing and authenticity and all of the little tidbits that we touched on in between.
Thank you for having me. I hope to everyone listening, I hope it was a fruitful conversation because we dove into so many topics.
I
really
know,
fun.
I completely veered off track. I feel like listeners should know that by me for now. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
During our conversation, Hani and I dove into culture and authenticity, as well as the importance of storytelling. A consistent theme on all fronts was about evoking an emotion instead of instigating a reaction, meaning that, yes, we want people to purchase from us as a brand, but in the long run, the emotional connection that is made from brand to consumer is what provides the lifetime value that affects your bottom line. It was also great to learn a little more about how she connects culture with marketing to help guide the marketing strategy she creates for the brands that she works with. Do you want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I say this all the time, but it's true. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. Tell me what you love. If you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.